This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:36 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Hezril and Kelvin. And for our next story, we're looking at how Malaysia can do better in dealing with suicide cases. Recently, a man was fined RM3,000 in the Kuala Lumpur Magistrate's Court for attempting suicide. If he fails to pay the fine, he'll have to serve 3 months in jail. The man wasn't represented by a lawyer, but had appealed for a lenient sentence and promised not to repeat the act.
On the other hand, Deputy Public Prosecutor Norelia Elina Nur Azmal asked the court to impose an appropriate sentence to the man. She reasoned that he had inconvenienced many parties. So this sentence is meted out under Section 309 of the Penal Code. It provides for a maximum jail term of 1 year or a fine or both.
So this is a tough one, isn't it? Because it's for... It looks at sentencing and offences for attempted suicides. So I think there's lots going on here. On one hand, we have, you know, we're looking at it from there's the legal perspective, there's the rule of law, and then there's also, you know, the person, human lives at stake, right? And trying to understand what they're dealing with and how the law can take into account these very difficult situations and the fact that it's not a one-size-fits-all solution.
Yeah, and making it a criminal act really impedes on the ability for people to ask for help. Mm. How do you reach out when there's a chance that you might be punished for it, right? When it continues to be a criminal act, suicide attempts are often hidden and suicide deaths go unreported. And this gives the impression that the law itself is working, but maybe it's not, because we just don't have accurate statistics to give a full picture.
Yeah, and like you said, not all cases are reported, and when they are, then, you know, how does the government deal with it? And I think it also fits into the larger conversations we've been having about mental health during COVID-19, right? Mm. And how the government has opened up lines and are making these resources available. And I think it's very timely for those measures to apply for this, right? And for the government to approach the situation with compassion and really taking a look at the root causes of it and how the government can support people.
Yeah, I think what's unfortunate is that, you know, at one time when it was then the Pakatan Harapan administration, they did have plans to decriminalize suicide or suicide attempts. But unfortunately, with the government change, we haven't seen such promise. I'm hoping that they will help push through this measure, pull in some reform specifically to address this. We are potentially facing a silent pandemic when it comes to mental health issues, being quarantined for about 3 months at home, even longer than that. And potentially, if things really get worse, we could be facing another round of quarantines. And what more with the prospect of targeted EMCOs being put in place. It can be quite scary. And as long as we don't have the resources properly channeled to deal with this as a health problem, we will never be able to fully solve the issue altogether.
Yeah. And on that note, you can let us know how you think the government can better deal with suicide cases, whether it's from a legal perspective or, you know, really looking at the mental health issues and support perhaps for people facing this. Talking about the mental health perspective, we're going to get some insights from Associate Professor Dr. Anasuya Jegatevi Jegatesan, lecturer in psychology, after this. Keep your thoughts coming. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
It's coming along to 6:43 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Hezril and Kelvin. And we're looking at how Malaysia can do better when dealing with suicide cases. This comes after a man was fined RM3,000 for attempting suicide. If he fails to pay the fine, he'll have to serve 3 months in jail. So we're going to get some insights on how you know, the government can approach this better. And to do so, we're crossing over now to Dr. Anasuya Jigatevi-Jigatesan, lecturer in psychology. Dr. Anasuya, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you for having me.
So the deputy public prosecutor asked the court to impose an appropriate sentence to teach Shafirul Hakim a lesson, as he had inconvenienced many parties via his actions. So how does this reflect the country's approach to suicide?
I mean, the word inconvenience tells us a lot. I mean, this individual is so desperate, in such desperate situation, that they have chosen to take the path of suicide. And if our response is a punishing, punitive response, you know, where is their healing? Because this person has not hurt anybody else. The action is aimed at themselves. And, you know, the ultimate pain is aimed at themselves. They didn't ask other people to come in and be inconvenient. You know, we responded as a community to stop an action that we know, you know, is detrimental to a larger community. So the attitude here of having it as a punitive measure, what is it going to teach this person except that, you know, I can't ask for help. I can't get the help when I'm really desperate. You know, instead of helping me, people are punishing me. Yeah, so that's the sad part of this whole situation. You know, and you're charging somebody, this amount of money. What is his reasons for going down this path? Is it financial? And now you're adding a financial burden. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand the public prosecutor's perspective on this, of whether, you know, you're expecting healing to come out of more punishment, or you're expecting some kind of, I don't know what, because it is the perspective here is not to help somebody heal or to help or to look at the person's situation and overcome the situation. It is pure punishment. And, you know, from childhood now we're telling don't cane children because, you know, it has detrimental effects. So this is somebody, you know, who's in a desperate situation and they're choosing punishment again. So it's frustrating on our side and it's like, I mean, definitely we can do better. And definitely we can have a better, you know, better perspective.
Yeah, and on that note, what would have been a more appropriate response from a psychological and I guess even a more human perspective?
Get help. Provide the person with mandatory therapy, mandatory counseling for a period of time. Look at their situation. Look at their living situation. You know, does the person need a different type of of care? Because there are so many factors that can lead somebody down the path of choosing suicide, and some of it can be mental health issues. So maybe it is pure mental health. Maybe it is, you know, lack of skills, lack of understanding. Maybe it is, you know, just pressure, and the person is unable to accept it. So there are so many things that it is a case by case evaluation that needs to be done. If we're looking at mental health and we're looking at how we are approaching a punitive... No, the thing about punitive, it's easy. You just have this, okay, this is the situation, this is the person is X. It doesn't matter what his background is. The person committed a crime. So it comes down to decriminalization of suicide, because that person is not, it's about themselves. It's about what's going on in their life. So, we are one of the few countries that still criminalizes it, and I'm hoping that as we move forward, you know, the debate about decriminalizing will come up again and we will move forward in that manner.
What does a fine or jail time do to someone who's already in a troubled state of mind?
It just means that the government is not on their side. The government just wants to punish them like the rest of the world. You know, it just means that I can't ask for help. I mean, I have to do this now in hiding. I have to find a way I will just have to make sure that I'm not caught. So more desperate measures will be taken. More final measures can be taken to stop to end their life. That could be one. Another one is in jail. I mean, in incarceration, there's more desperation. So they may actually go, if they don't have the money, then and they can't get the money, where are they supposed to get the money from? I mean, you know, so there are certain consequences when you look at human behaviors, and when people are desperate, and then they get more desperate, then they may not turn the anger on themselves. They may turn the anger on the system or people around them or other people. So, I mean, again, I'm not saying that this individual would. I'm just saying in a very general way, because you're asking, you know, I'm not pointing fingers and saying this person is going to do something desperate to other people. I'm just saying that it is a potential, because we're not helping. We are, you know, we're giving them another target.
Hmm. What are some common things that those in enforcement get wrong about suicide and mental health in general?
That it is only about attention seeking. That somebody who wants to, that, oh, when they say they want to commit suicide, it's all about attention seeking. No, I'm not going to deny that there may be a minor, you know, minority of individuals who are seeking attention and they don't really intend to commit suicide. They're just minor. But unfortunately, the majority of people actually complete suicide, you know, have told other people that they plan to. They have actually indicated it. And as we have seen from social media and the people who post on social media, and you have these very heartless, very small-minded and very cruel people who go and say, go kill yourself, you know, on social media, and then the person actually does kill themselves. So you can see that, you know, people are crying out for help through various channels. And if we shut down those channels and we assume that, oh, this person just wants attention, you're adding to the problem. If you don't know what to say, don't say anything. If you don't, just, you know, you send it to counselors, send it to clinical psychologists, send it to people who know how to respond. If you really don't know how to respond, sometimes the best thing is don't say anything. Because right now what we're getting is we're getting a lot of people reaching out through social media, and the responses, unfortunately, are not always helpful. I have seen some very helpful responses from young people and from, you know, from different people in all sorts of platforms, including things like Reddit, including the confession pages of universities, where students, you know, they come forward and they support other students. So one thing is just be supportive. If you don't know what else to say, just be supportive. Please, 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 I beg y'all, never tell somebody, you know, who has posted there, oh, yeah, sure, sure, you know, go ahead, you know. You know, and make it like a challenge or agree to a challenge or something like that. Because we've already seen that that is a very bad impact. Another myth that people have about suicide is that the person who is suicidal always has a mental issue. That can be sometimes, yes, they have a mental issue. Sometimes it is temporary. They're under certain kinds of pressure. They're under certain situations in their life where you know, they're overwhelmed. And they feel helpless and hopeless. If you go and look at any issues on suicide, one of the major determinants of suicide are people who feel absolutely helpless in that situation. They feel hopeless in the situation, and then they feel they've got nothing else to do and they've got nothing else to lose. It's not true. There is always hope. There are ways of getting hope. There are ways of getting help. But at that point in time, that person is so overwhelmed, they can't see it. So these individuals, you know, If they're given the right kind of support, they're given the right kind of help, they can recover from it. They can, you know, they can recover from that period of when they were highly suicidal. Then there are others, of course, who have mental health issues that actually, you know, create that the ideation for suicide very strongly. And I do want to actually also say that certain medicines, when you go and see the side effects of some medication, some medication can have a side effect of depression and suicidal ideation. So there are many factors that can actually, you know, bring somebody to suicide, including some things like a brain tumor. That also can create it. So sometimes you need to go through medical, you know, you have to delete medical, you have to delete mental health, and then you can see it may be just situational. So, but if you're going to treat somebody like, you know, because they're suicidal, they're criminal, so you must treat them like a crime. I mean, that's not helping. That's really not helping individuals who are in pain.
Right. And do you know if adequate rehabilitation is provided for those convicted for attempting to commit suicide?
Because I'm in the private sector, I cannot comment on whether there is counseling that is conducted in prisons for individuals who are suicidal. I do know that the government and different organizations do provide counseling, but I'm not so sure whether it happens in prison. You know, I hesitate to comment on whether it happens in prison. But outside of prison, when they're going to, if they are in centers or they're attached to different centers, whether it's a government center or a NGO, there is actually counseling support being provided quite strongly.
And how should we properly respond to someone who might be suicidal? You gave some tips earlier, mainly that we should leave it to the professionals.
One of the main things that main thing anybody can do is be supportive. But I'm going to add this for people who, you know, because when it comes to suicide, if you are supporting somebody and that person chooses to commit suicide anyway, regardless of how much you've been supporting them, or that person is using it now, using you as a crutch, somebody who's not trained, you can get overburdened by it. And then you can get depressed yourself in trying to help some people. So, you know, I would employ people who are helping to know when you need to step back and get them professional help. Or maybe get them some kind of other help or some kind of other support. And look after yourself. Because having two people who are depressed is not going to help anybody. So, while being supportive is something that is very important. So one thing is be supportive. Second one is take people who say they're suicidal seriously enough to at least link them up to support. Link them up to groups that can support them. Minimum, get them the Befrienders number. Okay, Befrienders is a really good organization that supports for suicide. Get them Befrienders number. Get them, you know, at least make sure they have it on their phone. If they don't, save it on the phone for them. Okay, and then get them to call people and talk to people. That is one of the major things you can do. Sometimes it's also looking at the situation they're in and help them maybe look at their situation from different perspectives. That is more for people who are under situational suicide. But the major thing is be supportive and be a friend. Being a friend also or family member also means you need to know your limits of when before you get overwhelmed. So, you know, we have to look after people and we have to look after ourselves. So we need to balance between those two. One of the reasons why I say talk to professionals is because professionals are supposed to have training and usually are. I mean, honestly, they are. We have got good training centers in Malaysia. So they actually train to actually manage the situation so they don't get emotionally overwhelmed themselves. That is one of those things when you're helping people.
Right. Okay? And pivoting to the legal side of things, how can how can existing laws on suicide be improved, both in terms of prevention and rehabilitation? Do we need laws in the first place?
We do need laws because I think, this is my speculation because I'm not a lawyer, but my speculation on why the law exists. Not many people in Malaysia have been convicted under the law, but the law does exist. And there have been many cases of suicide. I mean, suicide is the third killer now in the world. It used to be second until COVID. And so the reason why it exists is to allow, so if you have somebody who's suicidal in their house and their door's locked and they've reached out to somebody else, the law allows people, the police, to break into the house to help them, to help somebody. So in my mind, I'm trying to rationalize this personally. This is a personal opinion and there's nothing, I don't have any, you know, data on this one. But in my idea that what the government originally had in mind was that it allows the government to take action, you know, like the police to go into somebody's house when they know go into a room, a locked room, and someone is suicidal without a warrant. So I think that was the original intention, but somehow or another, you know, it's not worded in a way that is helpful. So I mean that intention perhaps has to stay because, you know, police can only go into a location when there's a crime in progress. So In that way, you know, I can see some logic in it, but how it's worded to make the suicide itself a crime, perhaps is not. It needs to be revised. I mean, like somebody mentioned earlier, there was an attempt before the change of government to change this law, and we hope, and I seriously hope now that that is revised by the current government because that is a very good policy to change the law. We are way back in terms of suicide. Another area is mental health facilities. We have mental health facilities that are really good quality for situations like drug rehab. So, but for these kinds of situations where it is suicidal or it's, you know, depression, there's a lot of it falls on NGOs and private sectors. So perhaps having in a bit more long-term service clinic, service centers for individuals who are suicidal or depressed can be something that we need to relook at or see how we can start integrating it without the idea that these people are crazy. Okay, it's not a ward, a psychiatric ward where people are insane. It is a place for people to heal. Those are issues that we need to come up with. It's how we look at mental health, how we look at people moving forward, and how we destigmatize it. A lot of our problems with suicide comes from a very old, very bad stigma that we have with regards to mental health and how we deal with mental health.
Mm.
You know? So, I mean, you know, it's not a simple, unfortunately, I can't give you one simple answer here because there are so many factors of how we have to approach it and how we can work together as a community. And as a community, the one thing for everybody is please kill the stigma. If we as the people, as long as we maintain the stigma, the government is never going to change policies. Nothing is, you know, very hard to change anything. So we have to get over this idea that only crazy people go down this line.
Right.
They are not crazy. Okay? That's it.
Dr. Anasuya, thanks so much for those insights.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. I hope it was helpful.
That was Dr. Anasuya Jegatevi Jegatesan, lecturer in psychology. And just to share with you some info that Dr. Anasuya gave us, Befrienders offers free and confidential support 24 hours a day. You can contact Befrienders KL at 7956-8145. Again, 7956-8145. Or email sam@befrienders.org.my. We're now headed to the 7 o'clock news. This is the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.